I didn't get that last minute on tape, Dave. I want to get. Could you restate what you just said? When you first heard Ion, you thought that was the energy of a screw in the phone.
Yeah.
And then.
So this. Oh, you're just getting it on tape now?
Yeah, because I turned it off, so I missed that important sentence.
You That's what my wife said. Okay, girls, get the Chardonnay. We can be coming up by now.
So, Dave, so you just said that you thought that was Ion, and now you're realizing it is Ion here.
Yes, except it was I saw it in a sort of a fog without knowing what it was. Yeah. I thought it was a phone or an instrument because he called it Ion. And then later, when you came around again, I heard the different vibe from your voice, and I said, oh, it's that, yes.
Yeah.
It's that yes.
Anybody want to say anything?
Yeah, James, I'm curious. This is your first time calling in on Tailgate?
Today, I called in this morning and then fell asleep.
Hey, James. Okay, Dave, we've been on the phone for
9 hours and 13 minutes.
12 hours.
But 3 hours on the radio show. We do this after the radio show. We do a 3-hour radio show, and then we just carry on in the teleconference. You've been on 12 hours. So, James, you might have some questions for Worcester. I think you've listened to some of the Worcester stuff, right?
Now, James is Ion?
No. James is a person in Australia, Perth, Australia.
James is in Perth.
Yeah.
Okay, let me get my map up here.
Yeah.
All right, now let's see. Bob, you are in Hawaii.
Yes.
James is in Perth in Australia. Now, where is Ion?
Georgia.
Atlanta. All right, I knew it. You didn't tell me that, but when I visualized it down there, I thought, well, it's above Florida.
Yeah.
All right. That's very good practice feedback for me.
Yeah, and then we also have Tina, who's in Michigan. And then
Tina.
We have Brian, who's a truck driver, and he could be anywhere. Where are you, Brian?
Right now I'm in Indiana.
Okay. And we have...
So, Michigan and Indiana?
Yep.
All right. Michigan is Tina, and Indiana is who?
Brian.
Brian.
And then Ed is in another Hawaiian island.
Ed is in Hawaii also.
Yeah.
All right. Let me...
Dave's landing. He's getting the coordinates.
Is that the name we're giving to this operation?
Yes. Dave is landing.
And Califia, isn't she in California?
What?
Yeah.
Where's Califia?
California.
You don't want to say where, Califia?
Gardena.
So wait a minute. There's a Califia.
Califia with an F is in Frank.
Califia?
Yeah.
Oh, now wait a minute. Indian?
Are you Indian, Califia?
No, I'm African.
Okay.
So you used to live in California, so you're wondering if you knew her.
I don't know.
No, but that's what you're resonating with, the California spirit.
I suppose not. Now, Gardena is east of Los Angeles?
It is actually north of Los Angeles. I mean, south of Los Angeles, sorry.
Oh, yeah, down near Orange County.
No, we're more near Torrance, Palos Verdes.
Oh, Palos Verdes, I know. Okay, all right.
All right,
now we got that oriented.
Right, is there anybody else we haven't mentioned? Guess not. Okay, everybody's here.
How about awareness?
Hi.
What about Dave? Yes, awareness is in Everett, Washington. David's in Everett, Washington.
Well, Gardner's is in all of us. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, but you're in Everett, Washington.
Yes.
So
anyway, now,
Jim,
what's going on?
Well, we're talking to Ion, but I wanted to bring you into it. And, James, could you ask some questions of Dave? Or a statement?
Yes, sure. Well, I really enjoyed the interview you did with Bob, Dave. That was excellent, I must admit. You're a great speaker.
You mean with Bob Carr, that book?
Yeah, well, yes, the book.
I know.
24 hours with you, Dave.
Yes, he's referring to that?
Yeah.
Book.
That was something else, wasn't it? I was amazed myself.
Yeah, because you remember, James, Dave started to remember poetry or something he wrote back then. It just put them right back in there.
Yeah, you guys seem to trigger each other's memory, which is cool.
Yeah, we're only 6 months apart in age.
yeah, that's right.
Anyway, the joy of that was like traveling back in the past, where each point that you stop is present time, and when you get supposedly back there, you are recalling in a state of present time.
Yeah.
And therefore, the marvelous thing I've had in these experiences and the learning way back there is that the memory might have 3 or 4 points that it recalls, but in a state of recall, there are at least 2 or 3 times as much that are the points, and seeing it in that way changes the picture entirely sometimes. And so what was possibly a near negative experience may turn out, if you were at that time in full contact with it, or in this time with full contact, you can recreate the moment that is in your memory and change the nature of your memory, not from suggestion, but from experience in the recall.
Yeah.
The key thing here has to do with Korzybski's Science and Sanity, which I consider one of the most important books I've ever read.
Yeah.
And in that, there is a considerable amount of energy given to feedback, which relates to your own nervous system and brain. But he had the first computer designers come to him to find out how to keep their computers from blowing up. And he says, well, you have to do it like a human, which feedback is in there. Because if a human doesn't get feedback, insanity comes about. And, of course, his key thing is neuro-linguistic reaction.
Yeah.
See, the concept of that is when you first hear a word, the circumstances of your environment are included in the impingement that arrives in your system.
The impingement?
Yeah, well, for instance, if you are in a family and you're a tiny baby and there's a mother and father that are fighting and they're using the word love, the neurolinguistic reaction for that person from that point on entails love having a very negative quality on its nervous system.
Yeah.
So that person's concept of whatever's being said is completely different from what is intended by most people. So we've got all 7 billion people walking around like that. And they're having crossed aberrations all over the map. And how do you get through that? Well, of course, the great seers of time have tried to show ways to learn to focus. People people say, oh, but I like what I'm focusing on now, not that.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's a blurb. that was pretty good. Well done. That was excellent.
Good. You got a trip, huh?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I hope it's something you can use, that it has some, not only communication, but a almost like a new keyboard.
Very good. That was excellent. This is awesome.
So you guys were on the phone a lot.
Yeah, 9 hours.
Yeah, all of you?
Not all of us. They've come and gone. We've had up to 15 people. Usually it's about 5 interacting and 8, 9 lurking.
Okay.
So, Dave, okay, go ahead.
I want to lay a little concept on you that I like to watch Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
You ever?
Yep.
And I watched him a number of times. One time he said something about he had about 20,000 people or so at that table, and he pounded the table. And I see him kind of hit the table every once in a while, and his friends who come in do. And so what I was visualizing is that if I could talk to him, I don't travel, I don't do anything, so I'll never do that, but it's as a concept as though I were there. So I said, well, I can travel astrally. Okay, consider this as an astral traveling story.
Right.
All right, I'm sitting there with Charlie Rose, and as it starts, I said, well, first I want to ask you, do you understand the meaning of Akasha or Akakords? And he doesn't know. And I said, well, for instance, in the Bible, it talks about the Garden of Eden that got changed when Eve got Adam to eat the apple. Well, up till the time of that change, the foundation had to do with the earthly waters and heavenly waters. And when they were thrown out of Eden, the heavenly waters was taken away. All right, what we have left is air, fire, water, as we know it, the atomic structure, as we know it, but the half of the water is gone. The heavenly water is gone. And that is why everything oxidizes and ages and fades. Okay. That other part is Akasha, but I'll get to that later. Anyway, Jesus comes along, and in his parables and in his shifting from dimension to dimension and making comments, he says, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things will be added to you. It's like if Akasha comes into play with that and hits into the level of Eden, this is the same thing as seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things will add on to you. There will be no death.
Right.
And so anyway, that's the first explanation to Rose, shall we say, of Akasha. And then getting into Akakords, that every time you touch something, there's like a cobwebby type of thing that is continued to be connected to it forever. So everywhere you go and everything you've ever touched has this Akakords. And actually, if you're pretty hip, you can walk into any place and sort of read the Akakords and pick up the traffic and the and everything that's been going on in it as a kind of like a reading. But anyway, I was telling him that you've had 20,000 people at this table, and they've all connected their Akakords to it, so it's like a huge stadium of 20,000 people with their aqua cords connected to this table. And so I said, now what I'd like to do is put my hand and your hand over the center of the table and let's swirl it clockwise. And it will send signals along all of those aqua cords, and then we'll see what comes out of it. And I said, while we're at it, let's turn this swirl into a dish, like a satellite, and then take the thinking in the minds of 20,000 people going through it for 15 seconds out to the end of the universe, and 15 seconds from the end of the universe to look at it, and 15 seconds for it to come back, and now we'll see what happens out of it. Yeah, anyway, that's another.
So so you're imagining yourself, you'd love to present that to him.
Yeah, but I'm glad I told you. It's just the idea that this man has been in touch with major minds, et cetera, for a long time. And they all touched that table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be a new Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, well, it certainly could be a system of communication at a fairly high level, because when they all connect, it starts to purr.
Okay, Ion, could you comment on Dave's scenario?
Yes, it would be the Fellowship of the Rose.
All right. That swirl may even look like a rose.
Yeah.
Much like the desk in the White House.
The Resolute Desk?
Yeah.
The Resolute Desk? No, is that one of the small desks? Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Is that one of the small desks in the Oval Office?
Yes.
The presidential desk.
It is the one that he's seated at?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, what I'm saying is that if you're going to work with these...
Accords.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. With Charlie Rose's table...
Yeah.
And you imbued table with this knowing of all those that have sat at that table. It's much like the desk.
Yeah.
Which is imbued.
I see what you
knowing.
Mean. Absolutely. The principle is the same and it may be even more fantastic. But this is the process of communication and communion that happens in places all over the world. There's like, I heard an echo too. I heard the other day that there are many co-ops or co-op type of things and associations and unions in the United States, and people think, yeah, there's that, all that, but they don't realize that there's 120 million people belong to them. And I'm thinking if that same principle were naturally functioning within all of those individually, that the best of the best would come out of all of it. And it's already there. It's just a matter of kind of alignment and shining. You know, people forget to shine and glow. Yeah.
Call it activating.
Yes. Yeah, I have to do it for myself every once in a while. I actually, unless I'm distracted or feel feeling pain or something like that, I'm in pretty good shape most of the time as far as my mind's concerned. So I'm lucky on that at this age.
So I...
Once you have, you can't unactivate. You might go in cruise control or something.
Yeah.
Is that what you're...
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cruise control is good.
Yeah.
Works for me every day.
Especially if you're in meditation.
So, Ion, engage with Dave a little bit.
Thrill, thrill.
Bing, bing. We've adopted your requiem. It's very wonderful, Dave, from all of the cosmically aware.
Bing, bing, Dave. You said that back in April 5th a lot, and Ion uses it on the radio show.
I did.
Yeah.
And we like thrill, thrill as well.
Yeah. Well, I learned that from my sister when I was a teenager.
There you go. There you go.
Did you just
we want
hear?
To tell you how much we appreciate
and her name
Joy.
Is Joy.
Ah,
yeah,
right. So enjoy. There you go.
Enjoy. I-N-J-O-Y, Dave. In.
Yes.
But Ion was going to say, you what were we going to say, Ion?
How much we appreciate your long work and degree of connection and all the countless thousands that you've been faithfully always available to help engage and bring them into their place of power. And how very delicious
right.
We appreciate it.
That's right. Amen, sir.
very, very, very.
I feel like I can say the same thing exactly to you.
Well, I think
that's where our synchronicity is.
Yes.
As we say earlier, we're not as good as we once were, but we're as good once as we ever were.
Yes. Well, I had this
great
story. This story about people that were each on different elevators, and they were all going up and down at the same speed, and they were going up to 14,000 miles an hour, and they were looking at each other and walking back and forth from elevator to elevator. It was going up and down, up and down at high speed, but it seemed like just a nice little world to move around in. Relate that to flying saucers too, that or by other vibration, because when you are in a state where you're moving up, sometimes you'll see a blip to the side and it's like something over there that's been moving down, and you hit the same spot at the same time for just a moment. Then you pause, you go back, and you look, and maybe they do, and then in which case there is a connection that goes right straight across like a floor of a building.
Yes, indeed.
That would be the rift, or story of the castles. Would that be two worlds, Ion?
It would be the representation of those, certainly.
Well, it'd be the connection between them through acknowledgement of something happening. See, we live in a spherical-like perceptive thing, and so anything, any point within the range of that, hello, can give a signal.
Yeah. There you go.
Just act this stuff out.
Okay, someone's going to have to keep it going.
I was going to say that was interesting when you first started speaking. You were talking about the neuro-linguistic, and I was following along, and I said, yeah, he's going to go into neuro-linguistic programming, but you said, no, it's neuro-linguistic reaction. Was that what it was?
Yes. That's the real thing. You see, the neuro-linguistic mentioned at all because it's in thought. And I don't have anything to do with thought if I can manage it at all. I have nothing to do with thought because it's a vibration that only reaches, even in its highest forms, about a million vibes per second. And I'm here to experience in form up to once every four quadrillionth of a second. And then I turn off for a four quadrillionth of a second into the void for a while, and then come back. And as I come back, it flashes the similar world that I was in. And, of course, the more times that I make this swing around, it gets more and more refined, and so that there is nothing left to burn.
Then what happens?
It's the void. Oh, well, you want to hear about the end of the universe?
Yeah.
The beginning and the end.
What happens?
This is good. When I discovered it, it was just a few months ago that there was a thought I had that even though I had seen so much, that there was this certain thing that had to do with the beginning that I had never seen. I didn't think I'd ever seen. And so I dropped that, but I think it was the next day. I walked into the living room from the bedroom, and there was like this flash. And I think it really was a real flash in the sense that a car going down on the street below the windshield picked up the light and flashed it, you know. But it was, it also at the same time connected with this energy of that previous thought about never having seen the beginning of the universe. And so all of a sudden I started going back to as far as the universe that everybody thinks we have, that's 13.5 billion years old or something. And then there was this space that was like, I eventually figured out as a billion light years distance, but it had nothing in it. And then in the center was this globular type, a spherical type thing that was probably 333 million million years to its center. And its center was in a form of a gyroscope. And the point before that was virtually just a glow that came from what we call dark matter, and maybe there's even some, you know, that's as far as they say they've seen, but I feel like the awareness, cosmic awareness, is that all swims in it too. Let's see. Here's the most important thing of all. Everything was created in one move. One move did it all. The very fact that there was a move at all was the phenomenon. One move, and out of it came, if you mathematically figure from a perfection that you make a move, it makes moves in various directions, and the energy shows up as a little tiny gyroscope. And as the gyroscope expands, each section of eight triangles better. This is the energy that relates to Rai. Because the red stone was one of those things which continued to want to experience the red. And the green that came out could not complete the cycle of all the stones until the red stopped experiencing red in all its variations. And that brought up the blue of Rai, who became the first priest judge to take the red stone and put it on the green stone and annihilate it.
Annihilate the green stone.
The green stone was the one coming out that the red blocked. And so the red had to go and be affected by the green stone.
Which one got annihilated, Dave? The red or the green?
The red.
Okay.
Now, the annihilation is the perfect state of all the stones anyway.
Right.
And so the paradox of this pursuit of all the variances of red, shall we say, was a paradox that had to be brought to an end, or else the next point couldn't cycle. Okay, now the priest judge had that job, that every time anything like that happened, it would correct it. But because awareness got so effective, it never made any mistakes. And Rai didn't have anything to do except sit there. But he did have the capacity, the new paradox, and it plays very much through all the rest of it, is curiosity. What if? What if I took one of these stones that happens to be annihilated already, but I put it on the green stone and annihilate it? That's a double annihilation. And that's what created the Big Bang. And in other words, out of this jewel with many stones came this activity energy that actually teleported a million light years before it started to manifest. That's why scientists can't find it in there, but they do find some evidence of that jewel in the center. And so anyway, you talked about the fourth power of God keeps popping up through these jewels, which are essentially tetrahedrons, or much like a zircon. This fourth power of God, which is 1.33, holds true through that. That's what amazed me, is when I went through it with my mind all the way out and all the way back about a dozen times before I was satisfied that I got it. Because, you know, you lose it, especially on intricate stuff like that. So I don't know how well I've made it now, except that from there, here's the thing, that watermelon shape with a three-corner plug pulled out is the tetrahedron that came out and did the teleportation to the start of the universe. And so we're looking at our universe, and it really is just that tetrahedron plug that, as we find the perfect center of that and align with it, we get a free ride as it goes right straight back in and bounces into the jewel's circumference, as like the watermelon plug being put back in. Now, since you've established the center of that tetrahedron, as it goes back in, that is still there, and that is the gift that's given to all the other jewels that are in there, and they refract that centering process amongst them all. And that, to me, is that land of rainbows, essence, whatever.
Would you call it Source?
Well, the Source, of course, is that first move.
Right, right. All of it, the jewels, everything came from Source.
That first move, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And there's, see, I'm not sure how to do it, but I have a feeling that in whatever existed, there was an effulgence. And that effulgence was like something becoming something. And it's that fourth power of God, 1.33, seems like that was the extent of the move, too. And if you notice, from there on, most of the moves each have that kind of an effulgence of 1.33. I know that awareness indicated a long time ago that's the best setup for business. If a business operates on the principle of taking its costs as a 1 and 1.33 as the sale, that the thing in between is like the profit, but it's 1.33 as a kind of like a foundation, I feel that those that operate that way are the ones who are most likely to succeed, because you've got a sustaining phenomena that goes through all your affairs.
Yeah, Dave. So when the glad to get this on tape. We've touched on this many times, but it's all pretty coherent with your recent vision. But what when the blue priest, there was a phase there he didn't get. He had nothing to do, so he was curious. So he smashed, he put something, I don't know what color it was, into the green stone to annihilate it.
Yeah, it had no color because it was already annihilated.
Okay, so he takes the no color thing, puts it into the traditional smasher, the green stone, and out of that is the beginning of our world.
Well, actually, not quite. It creates the dimension. But when the priest judge knows that he is going to be placed on the green stone and that will be eliminated, he smashes the green stone and takes a part of it into the dimension that had been created.
Oh, yeah.
That's a biggie, isn't it?
Yeah, you never got it. I never got that.
Oh, I have. You just didn't get it.
No, I just never got it. You know, I mean, I get parts of it, but we're getting it on tape here.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, it's that curiosity, and then the smashing of the green stone. The purpose of the smashing of the green stone is to not be thrown on it himself.
Yeah.
That the phenomena of whatever that was of change was coming about, and so anyway, that flipped him in, and then of course he was the level of all the masculine attributes that have been through all the ages, and then the rest of consciousness took the form in that dimension as Isis,
right?
And therefore, ultimately, had the control of the descendancy because of the pregnancy. And so every time that a new generation was born, and this kept on sliding forward, it was when finally awareness of Rai, of what the history is and what he's doing, and what he's doing is actually running from God. And when he stops running from God, the whole picture changes. And in a sense, the need for progeny ends. The dry time for Progeny ends, and I think that's one reason that has had quite an effect over all the cultures of the world the last 50 years, something like that.
Right. So when the tetrahedron is the foundation of that dimension that's created?
It seems that the tip of it is right down there at the 13.5 billion level, and as it swings out, we think it's all spherical, but it's just in that tetrahedron. And when it all comes back
to the watermelon,
yeah, then all the rest of the jewels are tetrahedrons. And of course, by learning the consciousness of centering right into the midpoint of this tetrahedron galaxy,
inside the watermelon.
Yeah, and then it goes back in, and then its position in the new being is that point, which then gets reflected on by all the other points, and that is the new Jerusalem, probably, or something like that.
And that's what's happened over the last 40 years.
It's been happening. I think it's been happening much longer than that, but the thing of becoming aware of certain aspects or points have manifested only as fast as co-creating forces co-create. Because
right.
I think, you know, I don't consider my knowledge and everything else as I arrived in here and it's been mine all the time and I did it all, you know. No, but there's times I feel that, but that's because I'm picking up on all the processes by which it arrived at that point.
Yeah.
And by the way, here's what something that I've learned, that everyone that we're talking to now with each other has their perfect path. And I know it's perfect because my path is perfect and we are meeting in this perfect moment. Now, this is just about as real as it gets. And there is, in a sense, a tremendous release, but it's like at the same time there's like a little flunk, and yes, it's a release into place.
You said it reached into place, didn't get the verb.
It released
into
yeah.
place.
In other words, it's a great but this moment and its acknowledgement is a great release.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's kind of like a kerplunk where it seats in place.
Seats in place.
Yeah. I think you get the picture that there are, it's sort of like,
Well, Dave, Ion's been calling it this period the end of the beginning.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. You see, this whole thing of the beginning being significant has created all the clouds through which we had to look.
Oh, exactly. That's what Ion said. I want to check. Is everybody here? Who's here?
Yeah.
James?
No, we're still here.
Is Ion
here.
Still here?
We're here.
Oh, great, great.
What you're describing is what your perception of the distance between the ending and the beginning.
The distance?
This travel that you went in your mind to the ending or the distance you traveled is a perceptional.
Well, I had the experience kind of like a full body experience rather than, you know, than separation. But so that was like a the whole thing is a moment. What I call a 7-second moment. That if you'll notice in all kinds of aspects of your life, and that there are certain points that have that 7-second moment, and it's almost like pivotal. And so it was something like that for me. And then what was your question? It was like then I moving back and forth to make sure I had my so usually I don't do that ever on anything, but this I did. So anyway, I went back and forth, and then as I did this, I was able to equate some of the knowledge that I've seen, even on television, about the universe and so on, and the timing, and the, because I don't try to use numbers very much, or if I do, I try to take a great deal of attention on them. But anyway, I saw that the world or the universe that we live in, granted, is 13.5 billion, but there's this other billion beyond it before the Jules happens, and the Jules only 350 million. And then so, but anyway, that's when I, by going backwards and forwards, I got the 1.33 happening here and happening here and happening here. I was able to trip back and forth through it because I had that clue, the 1.33, the fourth power of God, which has to do with curiosity and looking into things new, you know. I forgot all the words.
Well, they're perfect words. Hey, Tina, they're perfect words, what you're saying, Dave.
Of course.
They're totally resonant with what Ian's been saying today. Would you
agree? I'm so happy. I'm so happy that things are going on. You know, it's like I watch the news and all the rest of it, and I see things should be done and all the rest of it. And then once in a while, you see a story about somebody doing some of that. And it isn't that I've been putting a dragon energy very much, but it's like a certain part of my mind had energy on that till it was done. And I'd see this signal, oh, somebody's doing something about it. Well, all of a sudden, I had all that energy. Now I can put it to just living.
Right.
Yeah.
So a tetrahedron, you were saying that there's a center point in a tetrahedron?
Yes. In other words, if you take from the tip of each point of the tetrahedron and move it to its own mid-movement, and they all meet at the center.
Is that a gyroscopic action?
Well, the gyroscopic, it tunes into the gyroscopic action, but the gyroscopic action is that whole sphere of jewels.
Oh, okay.
And of course,
tetrahedron and creating a center point within a tetrahedron. Not that a tetrahedron has a center point. But
yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right, just...
like in space, if you want to do it, just a frame up in space. And
right.
And then it's curious, that shape, too, from the each tip to that center, creates a concave shape, too. And I look at these things sometimes. Sometimes what seems to be missing is the point, which would be that part of the
right,
space.
Right, because you have to create that for you. One has to create the center point within a tetrahedron, because a tetrahedron doesn't have a center point unless you create.
That's right.
And the point, all the various points into the center and have them meet up.
It's basically a kind of a pathway of from the points to the center, which is kind of a force, but it's not actually the substance, but it's a force within the substance. You know?
Yeah.
Like from the each tip, there would be a laser light aimed toward the point where they would all meet.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. My understanding of a tetrahedron is it doesn't have a middle, it doesn't have a center point within it.
No. Is it a golden mean ratio, balanced proportionate point?
Yes. It's like I didn't create it myself. It didn't seem, in other words, I didn't sit around thinking about what about this. I wasn't doing any, but it's like I was looking at the shape of the universe as we know it being a tetrahedron, and all the galaxies and the stars and etc. all in it, and then I felt in acknowledging where these points were, and actually as I looked at them, it seems to me that where we are is pretty close to that point, which is probably one reason why I can see all the lasers. That's good. That's good. That's a discovery. Acknowledgement myself, you know.
Yeah.
It may very well be that where we are, our sun, our earth, our physical manifestation is right in that point, which may be one reason why humanity has apparently expanded its consciousness so much. When we look out and try to find intelligent beings, and we don't think we can find them, but maybe we're looking in the wrong dimensions.
Yeah. Ian, do you have any comment on what Dave's saying?
Yes, it's very, very, very delicious and lines up from the dynamic that it lays it out simply and clearly, but gives the analytical pinpoints of places of connection. And at whatever place that you can connect, that's your beginning place of laying in the foundations that can allow larger dynamics within the realm of your possibilities, whether they're realized or if they're being realized.
Yeah. Yes, the process is just as much as the stuff. Yes.
Certainly.
Yes.
Perfect words on both parts.
Ion, you do very well by yourself.
Well, what you do is you let go and let God, and it comes out. Absolutely. And it's very delicious. It's so great, though, that you're still willing and able to share with other human creators so they get to see and get a little taste what this ascension business is all about.
Yeah, I won't say step by step, but a little bit higher. But
Well, my stars, it's very appropriate because, see, the interaction, what it provides and what it allows is that other human creators can look and go, wow, okay, I can get this. Oh, wow, okay, this kind of works. Oh, wow, I don't understand all of it, but the parts I can overlay, I'll take that. I'd buy that for $1. It's good.
Yeah, it's really good for discoveries. They're always fresh and new and unique and bright. And that's what makes the world go around.
Yes. They joke with us. They ask us, and we say, they ask some dynamic, and that's we say clearly, well, the wheels on the bus go round and round.
Yeah. It's all of this, when it comes right down to it, if you just got your attention, your perception, is pretty obvious.
Yes.
That it's like moving through a whole bunch of obviousness. Now, of course, you can have an attitude toward that, but it's like if you want to do it, it's easier that way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's like there's times when I'm, like, even leave my apartment and go out. I've been here for about 11 years, and the only time I leave it is when I go to the bank and to shop once a month. And then on weekends, I go down to the View restaurant, two floors, and pick up my takeout and come back to my apartment. That's my outside trip. But you see,
well, when you find yourself in paradise, that's good enough.
That's right. You see, I have big windows that look out on Mount Rainier and stuff, and I'm up on the fourth floor, and I'm losing my sight, so that's not too significant.
Yeah, because now you're finally able to see.
Yeah, all the time. I know I use my third eye more than most because I can.
Yes,
and just notice I've done
exactly
it.
Exactly,
you know?
Right. That's exactly right.
I even watch television sometimes from across the room, and I'll get such a clear picture, et cetera, that at a certain point I'll think, now, wait a minute. Yeah. But see, when I'm here, I can let my aura out.
Yes.
And therefore, I did this when I moved in here in order to heal. And by doing that, it charmed the place, the energy, and I got lots of healing. And then I got to the point where I like being in it, you know. And so it's like I'm a hermit with my little cabin in the sky, living on a cruise ship that always docks in Everett.
Yes.
You know, there's
now. Be careful. They'll start getting you known as the happy hermit.
I think somebody has already said that, but not widely, thank God.
Dave, when
now,
you talk about
if everyone listening, and if everyone listening here, you'll pay attention and you'll listen to the words, you'll get a fundamental foundation that you certainly can build on. Now, yes, granted, it's very specifically analytical, but many times that's what the mind requires to validate and vindicate the position that you're trying to validate.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, Dave?
Yes?
When you mention God, is God me, you, us individual, when you use the word God?
Well, I do that for convenience of people.
Yeah.
Thing I remember is, thou shalt place no other God before me. So even this thing we're talking about is like placing it before whatever that is, the great I am, etc. But it's really so fast a life that we can't see it. That goes for all kinds of phenomena, is that the vibrations are different, sometimes just different from what we're perceptibly likely to experience, but there's some of them that I think are different, completely different creations, overlapping.
Overlaying. You said it goes fast by? Didn't get that word about a minute ago.
No, the speed. See, we have the speed of light. And all this stuff, nothing's supposed to go faster than that. Well, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
That's within the universe that we have that
with
is here to
is that?
With your pre-prescribed. Yeah.
What'd you say, Aya?
With your pre-prescribed limitations is the only way you get bound by the what they call the speed of light. Very good.
Right. Now, I didn't know my father was telling me this exactly, but I got the idea when I was very young and I was talking about distance and stars, and he said, well, there's the speed of thought. So there as a child, I already knew for years before I studied about light that speed of thought was faster.
Right.
At the same session, I asked him where God was. And he said, well, if you look at the Big Dipper and you follow the handle out and it points to the North Star, and you look into that place where there aren't so many stars, that's the way to look. He says, I can't tell you anything more than that. Which, of course, is right in the center of the Milky Way there, that probably the dark star. In there.
Never heard that before, Dave.
Really?
Well, I like your quote of do not place any no other God before me.
Yes.
If you are if you are recognizing that there is a God and you're not placing that God before you, then what does that make you God?
All right. Do you know computers?
Yep.
Do you know?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
All right. Now, what is the computer system made up of?
Stuff.
Sand. Zeros and ones. Now guess what the zero represents, and guess what the other gods before it is a one. So it's like
zero was what is that, Bob? The interval?
Resonant interval.
Yeah.
Is the zero the resonant interval?
Well, what's that mean? Oh, you're so witty. Hey, Dave, welcome to our world.
A
lemon squash.
No, Dave, okay, what do you mean by the zero? What does that represent?
Well, it's like everything in the universe has the zero to start with, and then the ones added, and it becomes something. You see?
Yeah.
And how are you going to put a one in where the zero is supposed to be and make it work?
Right?
The computer won't even work. Isn't that obvious?
Yeah, and then so the interplay of the one and the zero is the resonant interval.
Well, that's in between.
Yeah.
That's while one is going from one to the other.
Yeah.
But that's a bunch of... It's like the fees that the stockbroker charges for your transaction, and he always makes out.
Yeah.
You see, that is if there's any energy loss between the zero and the one. If you're looking at this point in between for energy, and it's like I wouldn't say anything much about it except I'm aware of what you're talking about and where it is, whether one should do anything one way or another about it, I think has to do with motivations. The motive is the means at the end, you know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you can do anything if you have the right motivation, because it will cause the means of it to come about in such a way that the end will be the outcome that's involved with the motivation.
Yeah.
They're all the same thing. They're just kind of like rapids. And if you're aware, you can go from one to the other right through the clear water, and it's as though you're going down the river.
Yeah. So what were you saying about, you were saying the O and the one, you were going somewhere. What's that? Where were you going with the point about the O and the one?
Well, it's like I don't think of God. Well, there's a one involved, and so there's the zero.
Yeah.
It is there, and I don't call it anything, because it's zero.
Yeah.
It's like maybe you can say, with all the ones around it, you can say the zero is where everything starts from, including all the answers to all the computers at all times.
Yeah, the zero is a watermelon shape.
Well, it's the point in the middle of the watermelon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the point in the middle is that little...
But if you start with zero, and you're referring to zero being a nothingness.
It's everything.
It's everything. So if zero is everything, then that creates the ones that are all along on the outside or all along in the row. If the zero is everything.
Everything
comes zero.
Yeah, everything follows. Everything follows in substance. The moment you from zero to the first one, then all the other ones have reality.
Isn't the one when you go from zero? The one is the movement. Is the move?
I guess that would be it. It's only one. It only takes one move. And that's the one. Like the one move. I'm hearing jokes of beyond my own stuff.
Who said that? Who was the voice that said that?
That was Brian.
It was Brian.
It was Brian?
Yeah. So Dave, the zero is what Ian calls non-physical. The one is the physical. And the place in between is the labyrinth of the mind.
Yeah, I think the place in between the energy you're talking about.
Yeah.
Could very well relate to that stuff that Kapila laid out.
Yeah.
That the activator of substance is spirit. You see, there is the animator and substance. Now, the substance would be like the one, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And the activator is spirit, the soul.
Well, the soul's way down the line.
No, that's true. The soul's way down the line, right?
Yeah, see, it's like you with the Kapila stuff. I'll go through that. It's always good to go through.
Yeah, Kapila lived about well before the Buddha, right?
I think about 1850 BC or 1350 BC.
Yeah,
it was way back there. Anyway, he had studied the Vedas three times, and since it takes 8 hours a day for 24 years to read it once, he had to be about 72 years old. And so everybody knew he was this great student of the Vedas, and they were waiting for him, and so he came out with a statement, which is, this is what I have to say about that. And in their language, it's called tattvic tides.
Yeah.
All right. He says that the spirit animates substance, and every substance has a different intelligence. Every substance that gets activated by spirit has a completely different intelligence, and out of each of these multiple intelligence are five perceptions. So all ring around, all of them have five perceptions, and then only after the animation of substance and intelligence and the five perceptions does the mind even start to come into being. That all this other stuff has not, and people try to talk about the mind, they're missing all of this stuff that leads to its creation.
And in the mind, there are three sets of gunas. I don't remember too much about all that, but there are five in each set. They have to do with the organs of action and the gross organs and certain sensitivities, but that can be looked up. But the point is, as the animation comes through, the substance, the intelligence, the five perceptions to the mind, and the mind includes in proper order the five principles of each of these gunas. And if all of that is in play, it cycles back around and reactivates spirit, which comes up to the top. So if you have interruptions anywhere in between there, then that probably has to do with aging and health and all kinds of other things. But if all of this is in order, one should be in good shape. Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, we got into that because we were talking about substance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the substance is like the ones, right?
Yeah.
So here's the spirit, it's a zero, comes in, and then all this other thing that we described and looked at is various collections of ones.
Yeah. Good. You have a comment on that, Ion?
Well, it's just clear. It sets up the what you call duality or the binary code.
Yeah.
And that duality is that process. Now, there's code beyond binary, but Dave is right. Until you get the binary code down, it's fruitless.
It's almost like you have to get through the binary court before you can find that, oh, there is something else.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's that essence of the beginning, or as we say, the end of the beginning. So now once you get, now you get to the place quickly to where you, now you figured out how to live. Now you figured out how to come into your power. And once you come into your power and that becomes activated, then all knowing is within your grasp. And then like Dave, you can have your paradise, and any paradox that comes from that dynamic opens up even larger, fuller realms of dimension, because there's no limitation. You can be, do, or have anything you'd like to be, do, or have. That's the essence of creation. And through that manifestation, then you come to the place very, very succinctly, as long as you don't offend any rules and regulations within the labyrinth of your mind, that all is possible. And those dynamics very clearly, very succinctly, make all available to you. No limitations, no degradation, only free, joyful obedience to yourself, which is that essence of God, which is the I Am, which is indeed you, as you, like Dave, come into your power. It's a marvelous estate.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Ian.
Dave will tell you faster than anybody, and the better it gets, the better it gets, the better it gets. And how can it get better than the best it's getting? But it just gets better and better and better, and it just keeps clicking and syncing up. And that process.
And a little comment on how to do it is that I receive less than $1,000 a month to live on, and I live in the Broadway Plaza on low rent, in other words, on that I manage every, it's like it comes in sometimes, and everybody's getting it a little bit, and so why should I not get a little bit? But I look at it that it's just good management.
Good management, that's right. A little connection couldn't ever hurt, correct?
Oh yeah, that's true. That there's, but you see, a lot of the way I look at it,
if I push without meaning to, it makes waves. And it comes out with what they call unintended consequences. So I really am happy to just breathe normally. Oh, I got a story about that. Oh, this is an awful story. But it's about some guy who goes to hell. And they show him this room that people are up to their waist in shit. And they're drinking coffee. And he says, well, I like coffee. I guess I'll choose this. And just about that time, they said, back on your head, coffee break's over. So then they show him down. Oh, there's a couple others. But anyway, this last one, they show him in, and here it is. It's a lake of shit. And people are up to their neck in it. And there's this murmur that's going on. And he's saying, this guy, what are they saying? And he's saying, don't make waves. And he says, well, I guess it will be fairly okay. He says, yeah, but wait until those Jews combine with their motorboat. No,
give a new wave, the ripple effect.
That's why I say, even though I'm here and everything is stable and et cetera, anytime that I get some kind of flea-bitten concept, oh, I'll do this, I stop and catch it, and I see the waves it'll make, and I thought, oh, cool it. That was a nice little blip for a moment. And that isn't from self-control either. It's just from being aware.
Right. Relaxing and allowing.
Well, exactly. That's exactly correct. Bill.
Would you agree with that phrase, Dave? Relax and allow? That's what you're describing?
What was the last word?
Relax
and allow.
Yeah. Allow.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the allowance lets the new come in. If you don't have that in place, then you don't get the new come in.
Yeah.
And, yes, relax and allow. I just have to do a little bit more of that when I'm healing.
When you're what? Kneeling?
Healing. Oh, I got ankylosing spondylitis, so I have aches and pains, but I have various attentions that usually can flow through. You know, that part of the body is not connected to the part that is the control. It's automatic system that's going to go under it, regardless what attitude you have about it. But if you could time your attitude to be in certain kind of poise as something kind of like a spasm or something starts, then what happens is you can actually wiggle a little bit and that spasm stops. And you wiggle a little more and it stops. And then you can just stay and then nothing happens for a while and all of a sudden the spasm's gone. Well, back when I first had this 25 years ago, it might take me 5 hours to do it. Now I can do it in about 10 seconds.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm pretty comfortable.
Yes, indeed. Very, very wonderful.
You'll be late.
What was that?
I can relate with the...
That move?
And moving through it.
Yeah,
moving it out.
Yeah, and letting it tell you if you've got the attention. See, to me, some levels, not all things, but there's the hurt. It's like if you cut your finger or something, like the actual moment of the cut is a hurt. But every way in which you hang on to that hurt comes the pain.
That's right.
And that, of course, is built in because we want the pleasure. You see, in the same system of pain and pleasure are into play. It just depends on how we shift it. And it's like
right.
Like the part of the brain that
deals with it obviously has to do with endorphins. And if endorphins are healing, they also can make you high, the same one.
Just by letting it happen.
Yeah.
And we say on that same line, when folks are trying to find their connection or trying to overcome, and they'll ask and they get crossways of themselves and just can't quite get there, we'll finally get to the end of the rope and say, well, you know, there's always relief when you cease hitting yourself about the head with a hammer.
Yes.
There's always relief when you stop. Yes.
Yes. And if you get reach the end of the rope, let go.
Let go. Yeah, screw this tie a knot and hang on business. Let go. That's exactly correct.
Well, that's the Zen part, you know. Of course, that's what their bottle is. Let
you
go.
You know, you got to wonder if you've gotten yourself to the end of the rope, there's nothing, I mean, you got to, if that's the next movement is letting go of the rope. You got yourself to the end of the rope.
And the outcome's the same if you're halfway down the rope and you're not sure. Go ahead and turn loose anyway.
Yeah.
And then if you call Dave, he'll say, thrill to you. You'll give everybody a thrill. There you go. And, hey, your velocity picks up and you get to the same result pretty fast. It's very great.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe you could even fly because you don't know what dimension you're in.
That's exactly correct. No limitation. No limitations. Good.
There was something flipped by me here. Now, what was it? Some kind of a... Well, if it comes back, I'll relate it. But something you said triggered it off. Which is great. You know.
Of course. Of course. Okay, Ed, are you still with us?
No, Ed went.
Thank you.
Ed? Which you guys are having
on. With.
You guys are having a marathon. I was just remembering that you'd already talked for 9 hours.
Yeah.
No, Dave, can I tell you?
Hey, Dave, it's 12 hours.
Is that right?
Yeah, we did 3 hours radio show, and now we're doing the tail, what we call the after show part. We've done 9, now it's 10 hours. So we've been going for 13 and a half hours.
Well, well. Isn't that...
And just now getting greased up.
That's what my wife said.
You know, Dave, can I tell you...
Take it all, baby. Take it all.
Dave, we called you to get new energy.
Well, I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Because I got the feedback. In other words, what is given is received, too, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I get energy out of it.
Hey, Dave, can I tell you my story?
Okay.
What went through my mind as you were telling your story of getting from here to the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, you went back to the beginning. And as you were telling your story, what I was seeing in my mind was that you went back to source and you were at source, and then from source there was just this one movement, and then in that movement I saw, because to me everything is movement, energy, everything is movement, it's frequencies, it's vibration. And then you talked about, from that, you talked about these emerald, or these, you call them rocks, these colored.
Well, see, originally the channeling way back there called them stones, but it's only in time that I begin to see.
Yeah, and you were talking about the stones, the red and the green and the blue, and as you were going through that, in my mind, I saw the spectrum of light, and then I went back to the source in this movement, in the frequency, in the vibration. There was light, and then the light, and then you went to, you got all the way to the, back to the tetrahedron, and what I saw was the light entering the tetrahedron, and like you said, it was reflecting off the sides, and then if you'd like, take the laser beams, and it all points into the middle, and in the middle is you. And
hopefully.
that you is God, and it's like you say, you are the center of your universe. And that's just the way I saw it in my mind as you were telling your story.
And as this universe reconnects with the other stones, the center relates to all the centers of the other stones, and that is like the New Jerusalem. It is really the centers of all the stones that have a relationship to each other that is another dimension.
Is that Akasha?
Well, on the way to it, I think we the moment that we get back into the center of the tetrahedron of the universe we're in, that we hit Akasha too. See, that's why it has such balance and
proportion.
Yeah, it's like radiance, but it doesn't blow apart. It glows, and
yeah.
And as it aims back to its origins at the tip of the universe, there is this jump back to where the jewels are, and this comes and slides in like the watermelon plug.
Dave, the watermelon is that billion mile stuff, million light years before, behind the 13.5 billion, right?
I don't think so. I think the watermelon is like the thing that all the tetrahedrons are in, and then one of the tetrahedrons comes out, and it teleports a billion miles before it manifests.
Ah, okay.
I think that's the only way it could happen. And when I first thought of it, I thought, how can that be? And then I realized that's the mathematics that they're talking about, and they don't know what it is, and all of a sudden, there's the billion, and you see, since the one in the middle is 333, so it's 1.33 from the center of the jewel to the manifestation
right.
of the tetrahedron that we know of as our universe.
Yeah.
And that there's somehow or other some kind of a jump.
Yeah.
A billion year jump.
And that tetrahedron is the Rai principle. The Rai creates that.
This is all. In other words, it's through the Rai principle, which incidentally, you know, when you first brought it up again, it kind of annoyed me because it was like a side comment that was made a long time ago, and then from that came this, and that came this, and then at a certain point I was thinking, oh, really? And then I went on with a bunch of other stuff, and then it came back again, and then became a completely different trip than originally considered as a possibility.
Right.
Actually tied into the whole thing. It was the key.
Yeah. And that you had that experience just a few months ago.
Yes. Yes, it's.
And it became
I think
a profound point of connection rather than irritation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, and it was like being aware of a vacuum and at a certain point being sucked right into it. And there it was. That what I had looked for, it was like nothing, but the vacuum was
enough to pull me right through to it. Of course, that's what we say when big folks start speaking of vacuums, and we say, well, you know what's true about a vacuum every time? And they say, what? And we say, it sucks.
At least.
At least it sucks. That's right.
Hey, Dave, we talked to you on April 5th. Did you talk to Paul Seibel about our conversation since?
I don't know. Have you talked to him?
No, I haven't. Yes. I just wonder if he knew about our radio show, if he'd been hearing it, because I send him excerpts sometimes.
Oh, you do? Well, he hasn't said anything. I know when he talked about being so busy he couldn't check his email or stuff.
Right.
And also I think he's got an attitude of some sort, but I think it's preoccupation more than anything else.
Yeah. What? You know that guy, the guy who called you and told you about JW, I found out it was Earl, who's a regular listener to our show, and I called him up and got to talk to him. He lives up in British Columbia.
Yeah, where in British Columbia?
I'm not sure. It might be around Vancouver.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, it's all right. That's very good.
Yeah.
You know,
very delicious.
This makes me think that about, oh, it must have been a year or two ago that I went to bed. And as I started to go to sleep, all of a sudden, it's like I got the call. And I thought, what in the world is this? And in the state I was in, I could see these lights. And there were more than a dozen of them, I think 15. But anyway, I began to experience them as certain people that were the Hopi Indian chief, the two Cherokee Indian chiefs, and the all of the dancers that were on the plateau for that ceremony, and the Aztecs who had come for the first time in history that were there, that I had seen in an astral situation the night before. And when I told the chiefs about it, they were just laughing at me. So anyway, I go there, and here I'm walking on the plateau with all these dancers around and et cetera, and they move out to an area off of the edge of the plateau, and formed what looked like an eye, and where the tears would be, these two Aztec figures were. And this was the first time in history they ever did this dance. Anyway, I'm standing there looking, and here's this guy that I saw in the astral the night before. And, of course, I thought it was Tyrone Power, and because I no Tyrone Power, I thought, well, he's dead. Am I seeing a ghost? And that's what I had to get straight with these chiefs. And so anyway, I was seeing that person. Anyway, he was also one of these lights, and one went all the way down to South America. So there was some kind of a light connection between these various cultures that I had been included in on, and I just felt like I was doing something, that we were doing something. I don't know why, but I just thought I'd share that with you. And so I feel that the lights are all over the world right now, from Georgia to Australia. That we have our lights too.
Yeah.
In this session.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Which I, as I say, I haven't experienced this since that other thing. It's like, I don't know whether you understand that phrase, receiving the call.
be me or Ion or anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah,
you
I
understand
it.
That's it's like a high psychic signal that just simply calls for your alertness or something like that.
Yeah.
And then from it, I don't know what else happens. And lots of times it's just I feel like I've responded to the alertness and it goes out, etc. But in a case like this, I think we're... And I can actually feel on my head, like lots of times before Bob calls, there's this spot on the right side of my skull up at the top that has this funnel, little narrow funnel that sticks up in the air, and it has an inside funnel and an outside funnel, and they're spinning, and I can feel it coming right down, even like my head. And then with other people, it may be a different spot, but it's like a strange little phenomena that you might tune into that may allow you to perceive thought forms that are coming to you from others, especially if you keep your vibes high, then what comes in is high.
That's right.
Would you say that what comes in high is high if your vibes are high? Is that what you said?
If your vibes are high and this happens, you know it's coming from high vibes.
Right. Did you feel this before we called tonight?
Oh yes. I wasn't sure it was coming from you, though. There was another possibility, but that was high, too, so...
Right. Well, I'm really glad we got you.
Yeah.
Each time we get you on tape, it's better.
Yeah, it's better to get me on tape. You remember that time that what's his face, Blabby, Brian, another Brian, said, "Oh God, I wish I had something bad. I wish." And so finally, I told him, "I says, well, if you want to put a digital camera on me and just let it run, then you might get something." And so there's 10.5 hours of that. The only problem is that there's radios and televisions, etc., in the background. It was digitally recorded, but it would take somebody who knew how to transfer it, clean it up, and it really has a lot of information that is different from what we're talking about. A lot of it's jokes and history. And,
right. In other words, you were surprised at how much it got on tape.
Well, yeah, I knew that it was happening, and I got so I just didn't pay attention to whether there was a camera there or not. So anyway, at one point I heard that, what's the gal who was in Friends, the blonde?
The Heather? The one who was married to Brad Pitt or something?
Yeah, what's her name? Jennifer.
Jennifer Aniston.
Charlie Rose was interviewing Brad Pitt, and he was talking about Jennifer and saying that she liked seeing Tuesday at Maury's. And she would like to see more shows like that. So anyway, after this was done, I was thinking that I should send it to her, but I don't do those things.
Right.
But I call it any day at Damon's.
Every day what?
Every day, any day at Damon's.
Yeah. For some reason, I want to ask you about L.A. I mean, you went to L.A. in 75, 76, and I spent so many hours with you in L.A. for 20 years. What do you think of L.A. now?
I don't. Well, okay. I hear...
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
But here's the interesting thing. Paul had been out in Culver City for quite a few years. Before that, Santa Monica. And so when he started looking around, he had to move. He had to get a house, and there was one house that's for sale for $7 million that has some of his paintings, and there was like a smaller house but a lot of expense nearby.
So anyway, he looked around for something cheap. Well, what he found is a place in South Central. You know where South Central is?
Yeah, it's Watts.
Yeah, he's got a house there. Yeah, isn't that something else? Yeah. So anyway, if I have to think about L.A.
Well, I go back to Dave. Go back to a. It's in part of Venice or Marina del Rey. Where remember you guys lived in that house? And he lived next door, and always we're walking around. This kid walks by, and you go, you nod to the little 10-year-old, and you said something like, "Yeah, that guy. We got to be careful with him, but he's cool." Like to say he was a gangster, a little 10-year-old.
Yeah, well, that was the place out in Venice. Where all the kid gangs were around. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I think
that was 1980, I think.
Yeah, 1980, and I think of Paul in that situation, and then I don't know what Culver City's like, but he's still going towards these tough areas. He always gets in those.
Well, no, the Culver City, he lived on a very important tree-lined street that it was only about a block or two from MGM building.
Yeah.
And it had its own cul-de-sac, and this is where all the top technician of MGH. So they built some pretty nice houses along there.
Yeah.
And so he had a pretty good spot there for quite a few years.
Well, then I'm saying he's back into where he was.
It's like he knows how to do it because he did it there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like a matter of economics and space. So he's got a fairly good sized space.
Well, what does the LA experience 20 years there mean to you? Does it mean anything?
Well, I found that I was not in the right place, basically, because the structure of L.A. and Hollywood is—it's a milieu, of course, of various cultures too. But the culture that I was trying to work into in showbiz has layered up with all kinds of people who are scam artists and all the rest of it, and wandering through them. And of course, I seem to attract them all. They saw a light and they wanted to use it. And so anyway, I would work with them, but I found usually what they did is they wanted to develop something and take the money and run.
Yeah.
And so I did not like having to be that aware that one had to be that paranoid in order to function. You know, in other words, it was muddy water that you couldn't do anything about because that's the what is of it.
Yeah.
So I moved through it and functioned through it as I could, but that's kind of like I got a very good picture because I was able to function with some high and mighty in the middle of it all, and yet I didn't like what went around them too, you know. So it's like I didn't have a very good opinion of L.A. County, shall we say.
Too many bottom feeders.
Yes, and not enough food. Everything that came in was gobbled up, you know. And it's like another thing is that in order to be successful in L.A. in the entertainment business, you have to be totally pragmatic. And all the people who are flocking to get into entertainment are not pragmatic. They're fantasy.
Yeah.
And so the pragmatists are taking advantage of the fantasy. The fantasies are getting some results from the pragmatic, but it's pretty rare that you found someone who was both. And when I see it,
I could tell it right away. And sometimes that's how I could tell who were going to become great producers and stars and so on.
But yeah. I would, you remind me, that's what I saw Zappa. He was the one who was pregnant with Handicap with the Fantasy.
Yes.
He did it.
Yes. He certainly did. Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's a very good example. Yeah.
I'm glad you agree with me on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, after all, you interviewed him the day after we filmed the
interview with you.
Yeah.
we interviewed Dave, Jerry Fialka and I and Carolyn, and that was like October 20th, 1988, and that was maybe a rehearsal or the effects preceding the cause. Then by coincidence, the next day, we're interviewing Zappa, and the Zappa one becomes immortal in the Zappa world, and all the biographers use it. And now the Dave one, which came before that, it's like the story before the Zappa interview, that's coming out now.
Yeah, I told you that I was going to give you the acknowledge that you and Carolyn are the owners of that.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, even if I got some money, they'd take it away from me.
Yeah.
So I can let go. and then you can do with it what you want. And let's see, at the same time I was thinking about that other digital tape, I don't know, it's a whole...
Where is it?
It's in the file around the corner here.
Okay. That April 5th talk with you, we now offer that for $50, and none have sold yet, just went up. You get $25, so I think that's within your realm of acceptance.
The tape of the April 5th talk?
Yeah, when we called you and told you about Ion. I'm going to sell it for $50, and you get $25 of it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, hallelujah. Okay, that's a little better than Thrill Thrill.
Now we know how we get out of this whole thrill vortex.
There you go.
Yeah, Dave, so, you know, maybe if people hear this, they'll be more interested in you because you've laid out your story pretty clearly here. Then
actually, I don't even care that much about too much notoriety and focus on me because it could mess with my paradise.
That's right.
That's why I had told you before that if somebody started to call me or something, I was going to try to get them to contact you first and have you vet them.
Yeah.
Before I got the...
No, you can do that. You just give my phone number. If anybody calls you, you phone me, tell them to call me. Call your manager. Just tell you to call my manager.
Well, I don't know whether I have your phone number, and I don't have a pen. But it's if they go to the purple@5bodied,
yeah,
and ask and go to what is it, Dobbs?
Yeah, Bob Dobbs. Yeah.
Yeah, and then just and then my name afterward.
Yes, I will call you in the next couple of days and give you the number. So you can have it.
Oh, okay, I'll pull myself to focus to put something down.
Yeah. Yeah, write down 10 numbers. It's a big effort here.
Yeah, well, I'll get a big black pen on a big sheet of paper and print it in big letters, and maybe somebody can see it.
But that's right. You know, that's the, you know, your sight problem. But tell them to go to 5body.com and say, hey, I want to talk to Dave, you know, and I'll see the email.
Yeah, okay. That's a simple, I know that simple way to do it, and the other way we could work on too, but I guess the telephone would be, no,
here's, all you have to do is remember purple@5bodied.com. You just tell
them.
Yeah,
okay.
So guys, if you got any questions, I think we might wind up. Anybody got any statements to make?
I'm good. I told my story.
Beg your pardon?
He told his story.
No, I didn't hear what you said. Was that Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah, I said, I'm good. I told my story.
Yeah. That's the Leonard Cohen song, you know, many years ago. Let me turn to story. Let me tell my story before I turn to gold.
Yes. Let me tell my story before I get touched by Midas.
So, Ion, do you have any salutation to give Dave?
Well, nothing other than just be easy about everything and enjoy the enjoyment and let it flow. And the things you can embrace and have it. And the things you can't, put them on the shelf till you can. And then get kicking with it. Come into your power and let it flow. You're just now getting started. Let it go.
Thank you. Lots of light around you.
Yeah.
That goes for everybody. In other words, all these lights all across the world are getting another circling of light around them.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Yep. And the
flash,
lighter,
flash.
The lighter it gets. Flash, flash. That's right.
1.33.
Yes. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah, very beautiful, Dave.
All right. Lots of light around you. Au revoir.
Au revoir. Talk soon.
See ya.
All right.
Bye,
Dave.
So, Ion, I'd like to... Everybody cut off?
No, you're not.
Who's calling?
Hello?
Oh, you're still on?
No, Dave. Well, yeah, I forgot to turn off.
That's what my wife said.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to disconnect.
All right, lots of light around you. Au revoir.
Okay, everybody here?
Yes.
So, Ion, I think I'd like to bring JW in.
Well, why, Bob?
Well, I have to go to talk to others.
Oh, well, okay, well, get through with us. Maybe we can stay longer next time.
Well, what have we done? I think we're up to 15, let me check, 15 hours? I'm not trying to break a record. I don't mind getting to 15, 16. I'm not going for 24 unless we someday really prepare for that. Maybe have a press conference to make it
well. Oh, well, okay then. So what you're saying is you're through, so that's all right.
Well, how is James? What is, nobody, say something. If you want to keep it going, say something. The rest of you there.
I'm good. I don't hear, I think Tina's probably sleeping. I haven't heard her chime out. I haven't heard, James, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm good.
Well, it's been 11 hours and three, so it's 14 hours. That's pretty good. Poor Steve Reimer from Toronto, he has to compress this and make a file for us.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all right. Ed will handle it.
Oh, yeah. Ed, well, no, he's...
Exactly.
What happens, Ed? So I send it to Steve, he puts it up, and then you grab it from there?
Oh, Ed's gone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he goes to bed around 9 or so, I think. And it's now here in Hawaii, 10 o'clock. So he goes to bed, you know, and gets up real early, I think, goes for a walk. So it's just James and I and Brian and Ion?
Yeah, sounds like it. Yep. Well, all right, then. If y'all are good, we're good.
We're good.
We're there for a wonderfully, marvelously, delicious, forever, completely a Worcester.
Exactly. Who's that laughing? Is that Carol?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, great.
Hey, Carol.